Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Have you ever been on a vacation that's supposed to be perfect, but then you have a moment where you just cannot stand the person you're with? When Patricia Morris Rowe and her husband went to England together, they had one of those experiences. And she writes about it in her essay, Another Voice Had Come Between Us. It's read by Catherine O'Hara, who stars in Schitt's Creek. It airs on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on Pop TV. You can also find it on Netflix.
On a romantic trip through the English countryside, my husband fell in love with another woman. He met her at a car rental agency on the outskirts of London, where she arrived with the upgrade package. Nervous about driving on the opposite side of the road, he was eager to pay for her escort services, and before I knew it, she was with me in the front seat. By the time we had reached the first motorway, I was ready to toss her from the car, but as the voice of our GPS unit, she'd cleverly embedded herself in it. My husband nicknamed her Emma, after Mrs. Emma Peel, the beautiful spy in the TV show The Avengers. With her genius IQ and martial arts ability, Mrs. Peel was a feminist superhero, racing around England in a sexy Lotus Elan convertible. The new Emma navigated a more mundane Audi, but with 32 satellites at her disposal, she was a whiz of directions. When she uttered, "Your route guidance will now begin," you knew you were in capable hands, even if she didn't have any. The only time we took a wrong turn, we wound up at a spectacular hidden garden that my husband proclaimed his favorite spot on the entire trip. Since we had planned the vacation to celebrate our 22nd wedding anniversary, my husband's infatuation with an invisible woman didn't say a lot for where we were heading. He wasn't alone in channeling a juvenile fantasy. I had organized our vacation around a much-anticipated rendezvous with my adolescent crush, Heathcliff of Wuthering Heights. I had fallen for him in 1970 after seeing the film version of Emily Bronte's novel at my childhood Cineplex in Peabody, Massachusetts. It starred Timothy Dalton, who in his pre-Bond days stalked the rain-swept moors howling for his beloved Kathy. So what if he was sadistic and probably psychotic? This was a man who would love you until the end of time. Or at least the end of the credits. I tried to explain their convoluted romance to my husband over Emma's excessive chattering, but he was enthralled to her British accent and computerized lisp. "Isn't she amazing?" he said, as she navigated another maze-like roundabout. "I was telling you about Heathcliff. He sounds nuts." "At least he's real," I replied, which technically wasn't true. But in comparison to Emma's disembodied voice, he held a slight edge. "Can't we please turn her off? She's giving me a headache." "Then you drive." It was a low blow, and he knew it. I don't drive unless I have to, which in our marriage is hardly ever. 42 years ago, on my maiden voyage in the family car, with my mother in the passenger seat, I accidentally hit a dog on Easter Sunday. The dog was knocked down, yet escaped without a scratch, but its owner, along with his two little girls, began screaming, "Murderer! Murderer!" And in the commotion, the girl's Easter bunny jumped out of its straw basket and hopped into the woods. A hawk swooped down. You can imagine the rest. From then on, whenever I got behind the wheel, my mother would remind me not to kill any animals, which had the expected inhibitory effect. To compensate for my fear of driving, I concocted a theory that in every successful relationship, there's a driver and a passenger, which exactly describes my husband and me. I'm the idea person who plans the itinerary, while he's the steady navigator who gets us places. We're living proof that opposites attract. He's in finance, I'm a writer. He's quiet, I'm a talker. The list is so long that the minister who married us insisted we fill out an extensive compatibility, which we flunked.
It seems like you're heading in different directions, he said.
But he was wrong. For the next 2 decades, we went in one direction. Mine. The vacation to Yorkshire, which I had fashioned as a masterpiece theater extravaganza with visits to numerous country houses and gardens, was no different. My husband never complained, mustering interest in herbaceous borders and follies. His one request was to avoid driving on this one day. Since we were staying in a renovated castle hotel on acres of parkland, he wanted to hike and then take it easy. He had a conference call for work and needed to be back at the hotel by late afternoon, perfectly reasonable, except it was our last day to visit Bronte country. But I'll die if I don't see the moors, I said, picturing Heathcliff's brooding face against a gnarled and craggy landscape. Well, okay, he said. It was a long drive, but Emma was her usual exemplary self, getting us to Bronte's hometown, Haworth, without a glitch. En route, we passed plenty of what I imagined were dales, but no moors. Do you know the difference? My husband asked. I had to admit I didn't, except in my mind the moors came with Michel Legrand's lush Wuthering Heights soundtrack, and the dales with Emma's grating voice. Haworth was crowded and touristy. My husband wanted a traditional ploughman's lunch at a pub, but we wound up at a deli drinking weak tea and eating rock-hard scones. The Bronte Parsonage Museum was an even bigger disappointment. It wasn't even on the moors. This may sound stupid, but where are the moors? I asked a woman. She told us to follow the path behind the parsonage. We walked for a while, but encountered only a bunch of sheep. We really should be getting back, my husband warned. I stopped an elderly man who told us the moors were 10 minutes by car. I guess these are them, I said when we finally arrived. The barren land did look fairly wild, though nothing like in Wuthering Heights. My husband took a photo of me with my hair blowing in the wind. Okay, let's go, he said. I begged him to let me have a few more minutes. I walked ahead alone. I had no idea what I was looking for. Did I expect Heathcliff to ride up on a black stallion, take me in his arms, and offer a life where we'd live forever and never have to drive? Suddenly, I heard my name echoing through the moors. It wasn't soulful or romantic, just annoyed. Do you see what time it is? My husband said when I got back into the car. We have 90 minutes until your call, I answered. Don't you trust your faithful Emma? You know you're very selfish. Mercifully, Emma cut him off, alerting us to a coming traffic issue. She suggested the back roads to avoid a pileup, but soon we were on a narrow dirt path where we had to pull over to let a car pass. My husband kept looking at his watch, driving faster and faster. Emma doesn't know where she's going, I said. I think she's lost her mind. And you're driving like a maniac. You're going to kill us. Okay, I've had it. You drive, he said. I had never seen him so angry. He got out of the car, sidestepping a pile of manure. Okay, then, I will, I said, calling his bluff. But he wasn't kidding. I got behind the wheel. Surely he'd stop me, I thought, but he didn't. Emma, who had been my rival, was now my trusted ally. Up ahead were sheep and cows and horses. What were they doing in the road? Don't kill any animals, I heard my mother say, and now I was facing a herd of them. Emma was no help whatsoever. While brilliant at detecting traffic, she was clueless when it came to livestock. I felt ill and guilty. My normally sweet-tempered husband, who always treats me kindly, except for now, was going to miss an important call. I dodged pigs, dogs, and chickens while Emma kept giving insane directions when she said, "Your destination is just ahead." I laughed like a madwoman. We were in the middle of nowhere. And then I saw the hotel's crenellated roof. Could it be? Even my husband looked stunned. Amazing, he said. Yeah. Emma's pretty great. No, I mean you. You were amazing. You drove. With 5 minutes to go, he jumped out of the car and raced towards the ancestral home that wasn't ours, dashing across land that wasn't a moor or a dale, but a manicured lawn. But at that moment, with his hair wild and his blackberry, he was the most romantic hero in all of Bronte country. Your route guidance has now ended, Emma said. Something else had ended,
my passenger-only status in our marriage. Even without the help of 32 satellites, I knew my husband and I had just entered a new world.
That's Catherine O'Hara reading Patricia Morris Rowe's essay, Another Voice Had Come Between Us. Has Patricia's driving record stayed clean since this piece came out? We'll catch up with her after the break. Patricia Morris Rowe says that throughout her relationship with her husband, navigation has been a recurring theme.
My close friend fixed us up on a blind date, and we went to a Mexican restaurant, and it was a terrible date. We had absolutely nothing in common, and I said, I'm never going to see this guy again. But as we walked out of the restaurant, we kind of fell in step in a way that made me say, I'm going to marry this man. Now, why I was thinking I didn't want to date this man, but I would marry him. But there was something about a transportation theme even then. And then on our second date, he took me up in a glider because he's a glider pilot. And my sister said to me, wow, you must have been really desperate for a date if you had a guy you hardly know take you up on a glider. But I think I intuitively trusted him as a navigator even back then.
But in the 7 years since her piece came out, Patricia has become more comfortable behind the wheel herself.
Well, I didn't become Danica Patrick, let's put it that way. I mean, I drive now. I've yet to kill or even hit any animals, so I'm much more confident as a driver. And I think because of that, there's a certain independence that I have, not Emma Peel. You know, my husband does prefer to drive for the most part, but now I know, you know, if he gets tired or doesn't feel like it, I can also drive. That is liberating, and I think that's changed the balance of the relationship.
Nowadays, Patricia's husband has a new GPS that's replaced Emma.
The GPS system on my husband's car currently has a New York accent. Not to say anything bad about New York accents, but this woman has the most grating voice. We don't even have a name for her. She's now anonymous, and we put her on as little as possible.
And Patricia still thinks that a GPS and how it helps you course correct is a good metaphor for marriage.
Marriages are an adventure, but they're also about negotiations and compromises and realizing when perhaps you're pushing too hard, you know, being able to admit that you're the selfish one, which I definitely was in this case, and just enjoy the ride, but recognize that there's a lot of work along this journey. There just is.
That's Patricia Morris Rowe. She's author of Mapplethorpe, A Biography, Wide Awake, and 9½ Narrow, My Life in Shoes. She's currently finishing a novel about Beethoven and the woman to whom he dedicated the Moonlight Sonata. We've got more after the break. Here's Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
Well, there was a certain period, several years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, when GPS devices just became so widespread and the voices that accompanied them started sort of worming their way into our lives that I actually got a bunch of essays that were all on this topic that had to do with sort of a weird kind of infidelity of having this relationship with the voice of the GPS or other electronic voices, and people trying to create a workable essay around that idea. And none of them really worked because it was all sort of at a shallow level. But this one really did, because it really revealed their relationship and the sort of compatibilities and incompatibilities of their relationship, and that GPS voice was just what sort of brought those things to the surface. And of course, in a very funny way, it just, she's a really funny writer, and I don't know, I laughed a bunch of times reading this piece when it first came in. And in this case, it brings them to sort of a boiling point and then gets them past it, almost to a better place. It makes her a braver person to be in competition with the GPS woman than she would have been otherwise.
And here's Catherine O'Hara on why she chose to read this piece.
It felt real. I could hear her talking and telling the story. And it wasn't predictable, and I liked that they argued. That seemed real. On our honeymoon, my husband, we went to Italy. We were in Rome, and I had a map that, of course, I'd never seen before, hadn't studied. And my husband's yelling at me. And my new husband is yelling at me in the middle of Rome, saying, "Where now? Where do we go now? Where do we go now?" And I finally said, "I'm not from Rome. I don't know." So I get it.
She stars as Moira Rose in Schitt's Creek, which airs on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on Pop TV. Next week, Nazanin Bonyadi.
One day, his caseworker said to me, "What you need to understand is that he's not going to be fixed. He'll have good days and bad days. He's trying. But don't ever forget that he is a person. He isn't just an illness."
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Special thanks to Samantha Hennig, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional music courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.